We're learning Yeshaya, Perek Yud Gimel. We're about to begin Perek Yud Gimel. I just wanted to mention again, every once in a while, we're giving the shiur here in Ohel Avraham Mishkan Yosef, Sunday mornings at 8:45 for an hour. What's the address? 4907 18th Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, USA. The shiur is also available for those who are interested in, there are tapes available here in Shul and in Torah tapes on 50th Street, and Amir Tzashem will have it in MP3, and it's also available on Kol HaLashon if you dial 718-906-6400 and you follow the prompts, and it's available on the internet at mp3shiur.com. Perek Yud Gimel. Masa Bavel. This is a nevuah prophecy concerning the country of Bavel, of Babylonia. Asher Chaza Yeshayahu ben Amoz, which was a nevuah which was envisioned by Yeshayahu, the son of Amoz. It gives us the full name again. This is like a new section of Sefer Yeshaya. We're now going to begin a number of prophecies pertaining to the Goyim. And one difference that's noticed is when it dealt with Klal Yisrael, there was a stress on the faults, and a lot of the faults, looking at it objectively, were not very great, but Klal Yisrael was blamed for the wealthy people encroached on the property of the poor. They didn't judge the case, they weren't concerned with the widow and the orphan, they spent their life with parties and drinking, and they didn't vespaal Hashem lo yabitu. They didn't gaze about the actions of Hashem. They didn't contemplate the greatness of Hashem. They were in Osek in Torah. The Navi stresses what their faults are, and then it mentions what punishment's going to happen if Klal Yisrael doesn't correct themselves. With the Goyim, it doesn't stress so much their faults. It'll mention it, but we'll see there. The faults are much greater, and the stress is just, they've done this thing wrong, and the Goyim will get their punishment. The focus on correcting, by a Jew, there's always that pintel or yid, the neshama that's really, we want to do what's right. And there's a yetzahara, and there's a constant battle in life, but intrinsically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking forward to the Jews doing tshuva. And although there were cases where the Goyim repented, of course the famous story of Yonah in Nineveh that we read on Yom Kippur, but most of the prophecies dealing with the Goyim were not expecting the Goyim to do tshuva. There was no stress on them improving and dedicating their life to realizing Hashem. For the nations of the world, that won't come till Mashiach comes, that on a national level all the Goyim will be inspired to serve Hashem. But the nevuahs assure Klal Yisrael, and these nevuahs were said before they occurred. We're learning the nevuahs of Yeshaya about the destruction that will happen to Bavel, which will be many years later. And as we learn it, we'll see exactly how what they've done wrong and how they receive their punishment. We began with Sefer Yeshaya, and we learned about the 10 tribes being exiled, the destruction of Shomron, and then we learned how Sancheirav came with his army, the rise of Ashur, and then how they surrounded Yerushalayim and they would be destroyed. With Chizkiyo, they were destroyed. And we alluded to the fact that Yerushalayim itself would be destroyed. V'halavanon ba'adir yipol at the end of Perek Yud, the Levanon, referring to the Beis HaMikdash, will fall through the mighty. There'll be a king that will conquer Yerushalayim. Now we're up to after the destruction of Yerushalayim, which is foretold, V'alavanon ba'adir yipol, now we're going to learn the first nevuah for the Goyim is going to be Masa Bavel, a nevuah concerning Bavel. Bavel was the nation that did the Churban, and they're the first ones who are given a prophecy what will happen to them. Perhaps the word filtered back to Bavel, could be Bavel heard these nevuahs that were said, could be they didn't. The main lesson was not for Bavel to hear this nevuah and then to improve themselves. The main point of this nevuah is that Klal Yisrael should see how everything has a din v'cheshbo, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays back the evil. And even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows things to happen in this world, if Klal Yisrael deserved the punishment, they've gotten it. It certainly seems like we've gotten much more than we should have, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his cheshbonos. But everything has a reckoning, and the goyim eventually will receive their punishment. Masa Bavel. This is a nevuah concerning Bavel, Asher Chaza Yishayahu ben Amotz, which was envisioned by Yishayahu ben Amotz. It quotes us his full name. This is like a full prophecy, Yishayahu, and we mention his father, ben Amotz, that the same way he said nevuahs of consolation. In the bulk, Yishai is known as the Sefer of Nechamos. All of the 7 weeks after Tisha B'Av, we read Haftorahs from Yeshaya, which talk about comforting for Klal Yisrael. But at the same point, the nations that have caused such suffering, Yishayahu said a full nevuah, Yishayahu ben Amotz, about their punishment. Al har nishbe se'unes, on a high mountain, raise the banner. Harimu kolahem, raise a voice to all of the enemies. Hanifu yod, wave a hand. V'yavo pischei nedivim, and the enemies will come right in. They'll come in through the doors of the nobles. Before we learn this perek, it's important to give a little background history. Without it, you learn through the perek, and it doesn't seem to have to do. We don't understand what it has to do with Bavel. It mentions HaKadosh Baruch Hu has called his warriors to vent his wrath on the nations, and therefore everyone's the nations are all terrorized. They have aches and pains. We don't understand really like what it has to do with Bavel. They're waving the banner and everyone's coming through the gates. Well, what exactly is going on? As a sort of introduction to this, I would just like to summarize what it says in Daniel, Perek Hay. The Gemara discusses this also in Megillah on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. There were prophecies that were said through Yirmiyah that there would be a destruction of 70 years. There's one nevuah that Yerushalayim would be destroyed for 70 years. There's another nevuah that Lefim Alos LeBavel Shivim Shana, Bavel would be a world power for 70 years. And the Goyim were aware of it. And it always seems strange to me that the Goyim were aware of the Nevuahs, and even the Gemara brings down in Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, which was the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, that they were, he shot an arrow and they were aware of the Pesukim, and he realized that whoever destroys Yerushalayim will get punished, so the general ran off and he was Magayer, he became a Jew, but the Goyim were aware of what it said. And I just felt it's important to keep in mind, like even nowadays, we're not always cognizant of it, but there are millions of Christians who feel that they should help out the state of Israel, and they'll acknowledge willingly that the Jews are the chosen people, the evangelicals, and we have other problems with them because they're into missionary, a lot of them are missionaries, and there are other issues with them. But the idea that the Goyim were aware of the prophecies and millions of them subscribe and try to follow and live up to what they believe is intended for the Jewish people is a concept that we do have even nowadays. But in those days, the Goyim were aware of the fact there was going to be a 70-year exile. Nebuchadnezzar, who was the first king of that Babylonian empire, was the king for 45 years. He was succeeded by his son, Evil-Merodach, who was the king for 23 years. That gives us 68. 45 and 23 is 68 years. The next king was Evil-Merodach's son, whose name was Belshazzar. Now, in the Psukim, sometimes it calls Belshazzar the son of Nebuchadnezzar because he was a grandson. The Mephoshim discuss it, but the simple meaning is he was the grandson, and he's called the son. Grandchildren are like children. B'nei Bonim Arim Kivonim. So the third king of Bavel was Belshazzar. When he was the king for 2 years, 2 years passed, it's already year 70, nothing happened. In the third year of his reign, he made a tremendous party, which is what we're going to learn about right now. We're going to discuss in Daniel Perek Hay. And we're going to see that he was destroyed, and which is what we're going to learn about in a moment. Afterwards, the Persians and the Medians, Daryovish Hamodai, and then there was Koresh HaParsi, took over, the enemy took over the rulership, and they were followed by Achashverosh. He was the third king after Daryovish and after Koresh, there was Achashverosh. And he figured out the mistake with the 70 years, that it was miscalculated. We don't go from the beginning of the Babylonian Empire. You have to count when they conquered Eretz Yisrael. And he figured out the 70 years, and then Bishna Shalosh Lamalcho, in the third year of Achashverosh's reign, he also made a party. And that's what we read about in Megillas Esther. But he was also wrong. And the final Gula came 70 years from the actual destruction. And exactly how to explain the Pesukim, the Gemara discusses in Megillah on Daf Yud Aleph. But we're up to now the third king in Bavel, the last one that we're going to learn about how Bavel's destroyed. He was the one who was the last king, Belshazzar. And it says, I'm just going to sum up the Perek in Daniel. Belshazzar Malka, Belshazzar the king, Avad Lechem Rav. He made a great feast. L'rav rivonoi alaf, for 1,000 of his nobles. And he drank wine, he toasted 1,000 people, meaning he drank as they drank, they each put down the swig, and Nebuchadnezzar had 1,000 drinks. That's what the Medrash says, how Vashti taunted and made fun of Achashverosh, that he got drunk and now he's calling her, and after all her grandfather, she was descended from Belshazzar, he was able to hold his wine. He drank opposite 1,000 people. So he made a tremendous party, banquet. Belshazzar Amar Bitaim Chamra, he said when he was under the influence of the wine, La'isoya lemonei dahava v'chaspa, to bring the kalem of gold and silver, to yhanpek Nebuchadnezzar avui, that were taken back by Nebuchadnezzar, his father, his grandfather, min heichlo di Yerushalayim, take out the kalem from the Beis HaMikdash. And they should drink in it, the king and all of his officers, Sheglose, Ulecheinose, the queen, and all of the concubines, all the pilagshim. And they brought the kalim, and everyone was drinking, and they were partying, and they were praising as they were getting drunk, and they were celebrating. They praised all of their idols, the gold and the silver, the copper and the iron, the wood and the stone, all the different types of idols were praised. At that time, Nefako Etzpa'on Diyad Enosh, the fingers of a human hand, all of a sudden came in the air. They could see in the air, there was these fingers from a human hand, it seemed. It wasn't human. But the hands were writing, Vekosvon Lekovel Nevrashta, and it was writing opposite the menorah, opposite the candelabra, Algira, on the plaster, di chesal heichla di malka, on the walls of the king's palace. All of a sudden a hand appeared and started writing words on the wall. And the king saw this hand, and then the king all of a sudden, zivoi shnohi, his whole appearance changed, rayonoi yivalune, and his thoughts bewildered him. He didn't know what the meaning of this is. V'kitrei chartzei mishtorayin, the belt around his waist opened up. It's like all of a sudden his waistline, I guess, dropped by a few inches, and his belt slipped off. V'arkuvosei doledor nokshon, and his knees knocked together. He was a panic. He didn't know the meaning of this hand was. And the king called out loud, and he said, bring in the astrologers and the stargazers and all those people who know all these types of Kishif, all of these types of magic, and they should try to interpret what the meaning of this is, and whoever could interpret it will receive a hamnicha di dahava al tzavrei, he'll get a chain of gold around his neck, v'salte b'malchusa yishlat, and he'll rule over 1/3 of the kingdom. The king would reward him handsomely, but somebody has to tell him what this hand means. And they came in and nobody could interpret what the hand meant and what the words on the wall were saying. And then Anos Malkus, the queen, spoke up. Vameris, and she said, Malka la'omin chayi, king, you shall live forever. Don't be confused, don't be fatumult. There's a Jew who will know exactly what this means. It's a Jew, di ruach Elohim kadishin bey. It's one who has the wisdom of God. Uviyome avuch, and in the days of your father, in the times of Nebuchadnezzar, he understood, he had intelligence and understanding, and he could interpret the dreams. Daniel would know exactly what this means. And they called in Daniel, and the king said to Daniel, are you Daniel from the Golos of the Jews that you were brought from Yehuda? And I heard about you that you could interpret the dreams. And he again promised Daniel the tremendous reward, that gold chain and a third of the kingdom. Beidayin oni Daniel v'amar kodamalka. Then Daniel responded and he said to the king, Matnosach loch yehevyon. You can keep, your gifts should remain yours. Unevoz biyosach la'ochron hav. And whatever rewards you can give to others. Baram, however, ksova ekre lamalka, I am going to read the writing to you, the writing on the wall. Ufishre hod ahod ine, and I'll let you know the interpretation. And the meaning of it was, and then he tells Belshazzar, you should know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave such kingdom and greatness and honor, and Hashem gave such greatness to your aunt, your grandfather Nebuchadnezzar, and all of the nations were under his control. He could kill whoever he wanted to kill, and then he got proud, and he discussed how Nebuchadnezzar was actually turned to be an animal for 7 years, which is discussed elsewhere in Daniel earlier. But he learned his lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls everything, and you can't speak up and you can't act against Hashem. But you, Belshazzar, did not humble your heart, even though you know what happened to your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar. And now you brought the kalim of the Beis HaMikdash, and you praise your idols. Bedain min kodamoi. Therefore, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shliach pasa di yada, was sent out the palm of a hand. Uchesova denor rishim. And the following writing was written on the wall. Udnok Savadi Rishim, Minei Minei. It's been counted, it's been weighed to Kael Ufarsin. It's been counted, and now your kingdom is going to be broken. Like a Prusa, Ufarsin is going to be broken, it's lacking. Dino Pishar Milsa, and the meaning of this is, Minei is Minoel Elokom Malchusach. Hashem has counted, your kingdom, Vahashlumah, and Hashem has ended it. The end of your kingdom has arrived. Tekel, it's been weighed, Tekilta b'moznai, it's been weighed on a scale, Vishtechachat chasir, and it's been found lacking. Paris will be broken, Parisas Malchusach, it's been broken, Vihivas Lemodai Foras. And it's going to be given to the countries of Modai and Paras, which those two countries worked together. They would share the government. 1 year, one country appointed the king, and the others had the officers, and then afterwards they switched. The other kingdom would appoint the king, and they would switch the officers. Paras and Modai were two nations. Anyways, Belshazzar kept his word, and he put the gold chain on Daniel, and they announced that he should rule over a third of the Malchus. And the last pasuk in Daniel, in that perek, is Beibalelia. That very night, Ketil Belshazzar Malka Kasto, Belshazzar, the king of the Kastim, was killed. That's it. That's what happened. Now, what happened, there's another piece to the story, and that is that Paras and Modai had attacked Belshazzar earlier. That day, they had attacked that day, and they were defeated. So besides the fact that Belshazzar was having a party, because he realized the Beis HaMikdash, he felt the Beis HaMikdash would never be rebuilt, the time, the 70 years were up, and the Gula didn't come, so he was ready to party. He had another reason to party. He had just repelled the kingdoms of Modai and Paras that had attacked. What happened was, when this hand came out on the wall, and Daniel said what the meaning was, and this was there was a tremendous crowd. There were 1,000 of the nobles. Everybody knew what happened, and all the chachamim, everyone had been gathered. This was the front page news in the whole country. And once Daniel said what that meant, the servants of Belshazzar, all the army, they turned against him. And they summoned to call back Paras and Madai, the defeated nation that had slipped away in defeat, now is going to come back when Belshazzar and all of his men are drunk from the party, when they're all confused because they saw this writing on the wall that'd be destroyed. And the word got out, and Paras and Madai came back, and that very night, they defeated Bavel and they killed Belshazzar. Having this in mind, we can look at the psukim. Al har gavo, al har nishpe, on a high mountain. Nishpe could also mean a tranquil, on a quiet mountain, where it seems everything's peaceful, the enemy has been defeated, nothing's happening, and there's no danger lurking. All of a sudden, sunes. The Navi says they're going to lift up either on the high mountain. And Bavel actually was not a mountain. Bavel was in the valley. Shinar, that's where all the dead of the Mavel end up getting washed downstream, and they all ended up in Bavel. Bavel is a lowland. But it's called the high mountain because that was the world empire. It was a fortress. It was the greatest power of the time. So on this high mountain, meaning Bavel, which is the greatest kingdom, on this Har Nishpe, either on the high mountain or on the tranquil, quiet, peaceful country, Su'unes all of a sudden raised the banner. Harimu kolahem, raise your voice to them. Go ahead and call back the enemy. The first step is to raise the banner. If somebody can see a flag that's very large and very high up, he can notice it from miles away. But he can't hear anything. It's too far to hear. Once they see the harim, the Su'unes, you've raised the banner, people can start coming. And as they get closer, harimu kolahem, raise your voice that they should hear. You're calling them and beckoning them to come. Hanifu yod, and as they're closer, you gesture and you show them exactly where the entrance is, which gates of the city are open. V'yavo pischein nedivim, and let them come through the doors of the nobles. Nedivim very often is used interchangeably with wealthy people, because the assumption is that a wealthy person who has plenty for himself is the type that shares and he cares for others. Those that are, so the Nedivim, those that are generous, called Nediv Lev, those who have a generous heart, Bavel's called the Nedivim because they were the wealthy, powerful nation of the time. Other Meforshim say, V'yavo pischei Nedivim, that it happens to be Klal Yisrael had an easy gullus in Bavel. Compared to what we're suffering through the other exiles, Bavel was actually an easier time. Nebuchadnezzar came and he locked up Jehoiachin, the king of Yehuda, and then later on Evel Merodach let him out of jail and promised him he could eat by the royal table. That's, in other words, even though he had defeated Yehuda, He even let the king out, and he treated the king respectively. It says at the end of Malachim, Malachim Beis, it says, V'aruchoso, aruchas tamid nitnolo. His meal, his allowance, his daily portion was given to me, Eis HaMelech, from the king. Dvar yom biyomo. Every day, the king provided food for Jehoiachin, for the king. B'chol yemei chayiv, the rest of his life. So he was conquered, and the king could have beheaded him or could have made him sit in a dungeon for the rest of his life, but he was let out of jail, and it says over here that they changed his prison garb, and he was treated respectfully. And the Jews had a relatively easy time in Bavel, and in fact, when they went up to build the second Beis HaMikdash, most of them didn't go. Most of them stayed in Bavel. Bavel could be called the Pischei Nedivim. the doors of the nobles, those that are generous and those that are gracious. But Bavel is still going to get their punishment because they're the ones who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. And they caused much suffering at the times of, at the time of the Churban. You're asking a very good question, which I don't, there is a well-known question that why are the nations punished? The Ramban mentions it, the Rambam mentions it in Hilchas Tshuva. Why are the nations punished when they just carried out the will of Hashem? The Rambam says, I believe the Rambam says the reason is because they didn't have to do it. It was going to happen. Somebody had to do it, but it shouldn't have been them. They should have let somebody else do it. To which the Ramban objects, and there's a Rav that asks on it, that if that's the will of Hashem, so whoever does it gets a mitzvah. What do you mean let somebody else do it? It's a mitzvah. And two answers given are, one is that Hashem intended a certain punishment to be given. Ani katzavti ma'at vehema ozru l'ra'ah. There's a pasuk Hashem says, I was a little bit angry. I wanted it to be a certain punishment. But the goyim did much more than they were supposed to. Now, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed that there should be more, and we're putting together a lot of different concepts, but there's a medrash that says, Nachamu, Nachamu, Ami. What's the be comforted, be comforted? Why does it say double comfort? And it says, the reason is because Chet Chata Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim sinned in a double manner, and they were punished, Kilacha B'yad Hashem, Kiflayim B'chol Chata Seha. They seem to have gotten a double punishment, so they get a double comfort. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has his way of working everything out, that everything has its cheshbon, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have been happier if less of a punishment was given, but of course Klal Yisrael will be recompensed, and the nations will be punished for what they did. So, without, I guess, going into that too much at this moment, that's one reason the goyim did more than they were supposed to. And another answer given is that certain things are a mitzvah if that's your intent. And if it's not your intention, it's not a mitzvah. If somebody goes ahead and he whips a fellow Jew, you know, 39 times, he gives him malchus. So if he knew that the guy did an Aveira and Bezdin sentenced him to Malchus, so he's doing what Bezdin, he's a Shliach Bezdin, and he's doing what Bezdin asked. But if he does it on his own, he's over the Issa D'Oraisa of hitting another Jew. But by the Goyim, if they would have done it to be doing the will of Hashem, they would have gotten credit. But they didn't. They did it out of their own wickedness. And even though Hashem wanted it to happen, and that was the plan, but the one who did it, as the Ramban says, the Ganav stole, and whoever stole is going to get punished, even though the victim was intended to be robbed. In other words, if the guy was robbed and he lost $1,000, he would have lost $1,000 some other way. In other words, he was definitely going to lose $1,000. But the one who steals from him is held accountable. So Alhar Nishpes Unes, raise the banner over this high mountain, raise the banner, Harimu Kolahem, lift the voice. Harnifu Yod, wave the hand. V'yavo Pischei Nedivim, and let the enemy come streaming in through the gates of the Nedivim, of the nobles. Anitzi Vesi Limakudoshoi. Hashem says, I've commanded Limakudoshoi, those that I've designated. Normally, Mikudoshoi means my holy ones. But a holy one is a person, Kedusha, is somebody who's separated from this world and he has a specific purpose and he's not part of this world. He's separate. He's different. He has his own separate mission. And Lahavdil, but sometimes you have the same word, Kedusha, having the exact opposite connotation. A Kedesha is a woman who's designated for Zanus, an immoral woman who's, again, not part of the moral society, and she's a Kadesha, she's on her own, living her own immoral life. Here, Limikudoshoi, I've commanded my Mikudoshoi. The simple meaning is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has designated Paras and Modai, these nations, to destroy Bavel. I've commanded them, Gam Karasi Giboirai, and I have summoned my warriors, La'api, that they should execute my wrath. Hashem has a tremendous anger, and it's going to be vented on Bavel through Poras and Modai. Alize gavosi. And they're going to be exuberant. They're going to have such a joy. Gavosi, because of my grandeur. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show his gaiva, his greatness. Hashem is going to show his greatness. And therefore, Poras and Modai are going to be alize. They're going to be exuberant. They're going to have a tremendous joy carrying out the punishment against Bavel. Hashem commanded, Anitzi Visi Limakudoshoi. They would not have come on their own. HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended that these nations should come and take revenge against Bavel. And therefore, the hand on the wall, and the fact that the people in Bavel went and they summoned Poras and Modai to come back. Poras and Modai was not going to come back for a counterattack. It's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu intentionally wanted them to come to return and defeat Bavel. Could be they weren't even naturally strong. They were only giborai, my strongmen la'api, for my wrath. The anger of Hashem gave them the power that they ordinarily would not have had. They're going to have this simcha, this joy, this alize, because of gavosi. Hashem is showing his greatness, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give them the power. There could be their kolim mekudoshoi. There's a pasuk in Ezra. The nation of Paras are the ones that helped, that enabled the building of the second Beis Hamikdash. It says in Ezra, there's a pasuk that he was himself aware of his role. At the very beginning of Sefer Ezra, Perek Aleph, pasuk Beis. Ko Amar Koresh Melech Paras. So says Koresh, the king of Paras. Kol Mamlechos Haaretz Nosan Li Hashem Elokei Hashamoyim. All of the kingdoms of the earth, Hashem, the God of heaven, has given to me. V'upokad Olai. And Hashem commanded me, Livnos Lo Bayis, to build for him a temple, B'Yerushalayim Asher B'Yehuda. In Yerushalayim, that's in the country of Yehuda. In other words, Koresh, the king of Paras, realized he was designated by Hashem to build the Beis Hamikdash. The 70 years were up, and without going into the intricacies of that 70-year cheshbon, which we alluded to before, but Koresh realized it was his job to build the Beis Hamikdash. Anitzi veisi li mekudoshoi. I've commanded those that I've sanctified, those that I have prepared, I've dedicated. Meaning Koresh. Koresh is Limakudosha. He's going to build the Beis Hamikdash. But his first role is to come in and destroy Bavel. There's an interesting Gemara in Brachas that pertains to this. The Gemara discusses the Chachamim were praising the nations of the world for whatever good they did. It points out, Rabbi Akiva says there were three things he loved about the people from Modai. And then Amram Gamliel, another statement, Bishlosha Devarim Ohev Anias HaParsiim. In three areas, I love the conduct of the Persians. The people in Paras have an exemplary behavior. They are Hein Tsnuim Ba'achilosan. They're tsanua, they're modest when they eat. They don't eat in public, they don't go walking down the street chewing on a Subway sandwich, you know, but they eat with a certain modesty. Utsnuim beveis hakisei, and in the bathroom, they're also tsanua. Utsnuim bedover acher, and in their marital relations, they're also modest. That's what the Gemara says, and as a praise of the Parsian. The Gemara in Brachas on Daf Chesamid Beis. Anitzi veisi limekudoshoi. And then the Gemara brings our pasuk here. I've commanded my mekudoshoi. Tani Rav Yosef, the Amoira, Rav Yosef learnt in a brisa. Elo haparsiim hamekudoshim umizumonim legehenim. It's referring, this pasuk is going on the Persians that are mekudoshim. They're like dedicated, umuzumonim, and they are prepared for Gehenim. That's what the Gemara says. It seems to be, as Rashi says, Anitzi Vesili Mekudoshe, Rashi says, B'mapolas Bovel Ksiv. This pasuk is a pasuk about the downfall of Bovel. Anitzi Vesias Malchei Parasumodai Lovul Hashchisa. I commanded the kings of Parasumodai to come and destroy the country of Bovel. So all of a sudden Rav Yosef takes that pasuk and he says that they are designated, they're prepared for Gehenim. The Marsha just makes the point that it says La'asi Lovo, all the Goyim are going to come and they're going to want to have a reward because they enabled Klal Yisrael to serve Hashem and they did good. The Romans are going to say they built bridges and they made roads and therefore they deserve a reward. And it mentions the Parsim are also going to come. And the Parsim are going to say, you know, the Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. We're the ones who built the Beis HaMikdash. And what the Navi here is saying, Anitzi Vesili Mekudoshoi, I've commanded those that will build the Beis HaMikdash. And they seem to have some good to them. But you should know that their guilt is much greater than the good. It could be the good was, he knew that the 70 years the Beis HaMikdash would have to be built, and he realized that this was clearly the hand of God. Talking about that hand on the wall. It was clearly a hand sent from Hashem to tell him that Bovel is going to have the downfall, that they're supposed to attack. Could be he did it all because he realized his whole empire would be built on helping the Jews, and otherwise his empire wouldn't last. But whatever, we look at it and we seem to see some good in them. But you should realize, on the balance sheet, they're mekudoshim u'mizumonim legehenim. There's a story I saw recently with the Netziv. The Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. This is in the late 1800s. And the story goes, there was once a group of Chachamim, of the Gedolim, and they were talking, and they were gathered together, and the conversation came up about a certain maskil, somebody who was opposed to the frum Jews. And this maskil, there was a number of people who praised him that he loved the Jewish people and he did a lot of good. And people were waiting to hear what the Netziv would have to comment, what he would have to say. So he said, I'll tell you a story. There was once, that's a mashal. There was once a wealthy man who had a single daughter, his only daughter, and she got sick. And he went and he took her to all the top doctors and specialists if there was some way they could heal her. Finally, a specialist said, in order for her to be better, she would have to eat the meat of a chazer. She'd have to have pig meat. If that's necessary to save her life, it's of course allowed. It's a mitzvah. So he decided that's it. They'll have to get her ham. They'll have to get her some pork. They told her this, and she accepted, but she said, you know, if it's true, I have to eat the chazer, but at least I want that it should have a shechita. They should shecht it. Okay, there's no point in shechting it. Shechting it doesn't make it more permissible. But if that's what she wanted, they found somebody to shecht it. Afterwards, this girl said, I'd like them to check the lungs and make sure the lungs are okay, there's nothing wrong with it. So again, they figure, okay, if that's what she wants, I'll check the lungs. So they checked the lungs, and there was a question. So they brought it to the Rav. So the Rav said, and he looked at it, and he said, I'll tell you the truth. What can I say? I can't say that the lungs are kosher. They're not kosher, it's a pig. All I can tell you is, if you had lungs like this in a kosher animal, then the animal would be kosher. So he said, sometimes you can see a behavior by somebody who's not serving Hashem, by this maskil, this person who opposes Yiddishkeit. If this kind of behavior would be by a Jew, it would certainly be commendable. These behaviors of the Parsim, the Gemara says, in a few areas that they were tsanua, their modesty is something that's worth emulating. But in general, you should realize you shouldn't be caught up and be overawed and impressed and talk about how good the Persians are. There are certain milas they have, certain positive qualities, but you should know, Anitzi Vesili Mekudoshei, they're the ones who are dedicated for Gehenim, and They're not HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chosen ones. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I've called them that they should come and destroy Bavel. Kol Hamon Beharim. And so there's a sound of a commotion in the mountains. And the commotion, it's not clear who's making the commotion. Is it a party? Is it a harvesting operation where you have hundreds of people swinging the sickles? Well, what's the noise? There's a big noise. Is it flocks of sheep braying? But there's a kol hamon, a sound of just a multitude. There's a crowd, beharim on the distant mountains. Demus amrov. And then it's comparable. It seems that there's a lot of people. Kol sha'on mamlechus goyim. And then with a moment of contemplation, they all of a sudden realize that sound, that noise, sha'on is the commotion of mamlechus goyim nesofim, kingdoms of nations gathering. And as I say, these psukim are being said before Bavel even became the world power. This is in the times of Yeshaya. We just finished with, this is in the times of Sancheiriv, of the king of Ashur, the Syrian Empire. And he's already foretelling there will be nations destroying Bavel. Which I think in general, the whole idea of an alliance, this Paras and Modai, sharing the kingdom, is an unusual setup. But there's Mamlechos Goyim Nesofim. There are kingdoms of nations gathering. And then as the army gets closer and they notice, Hashem Tzvokos, it's like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the commander-in-chief, the Tzvokos means he controls all the hosts, he controls the whole creation. Like a well-tuned, like a machine, like a army that every battalion and every division has their place. Hashem Tzvokos Mefakeh Tzvo Milchoma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is assigning the Tzvo Milchoma, the Legion of War. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is bringing this army back to destroy Bavel. Boy Meyeretz Merchok, they coming from afar, a distant land. Mikzei HaShemoyim, from the ends of the heavens. Paras and Modai were not neighbors of Bavel, and it wasn't like there was a territorial dispute, and now they decided now is their chance to take over. They're coming from far away. And a nation that comes from far away very often is not even interested in conquering the land because they're not nearby, they don't have their officers, they don't have their army. They just want to conquer and plunder, and they're coming from far away to destroy Bavel. Hashem uklei zamo. It's Hashem with his weapons of anger. Lechabel kol haaretz. And the intention is to destroy the land. Heililu, wail, cry out, ki korov yom Hashem. The day of Hashem is close. There's a medrash that says, the Me'am Lois brings down, they asked Bilam, are the Jewish people, is there going to be an end when there'll be a geula? And Bilam said, yes, the Jewish people will have a geula. When will it be? And Bilam answered with that pasuk in the Torah, Ashurenu v'lo karov, I see it and it's not close. It's in the distant future that Dorach Kochov Miyakov, there'll be a star that will rise and the Jewish people will have their geula, but it's not here. When they ask the Jewish Nevi'im, when they ask Yeshaya, Yeshaya reassures us, Ki Korov Yom Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it seems like a long time, but it's really close. And in this case, the simple meaning, of course, is that it is close. This was happening right now, that bubble would be destroyed. But it's taken in a sense that in general we should know the Geula, in general the Geula is close. Now it really, really, really is close. We're in the Ikvas of the Mashiach, we're at the last leg of the journey. But hey, Lilu, people in Bavel, cry out, Ki Korov Yom Hashem, the day of Hashem is close. Kishod Mishaka Yovo. It's like a shod, like a sudden attack. Mishaka Yovo, coming from Hashem. Sometimes a person knows that the enemy is approaching and it won't come for a long time. There's an advantage and a disadvantage. The one advantage is, of course, you have a chance to mobilize and to prepare your forces, that you are prepared and you're hopefully strong enough to resist attack. On the other hand, that sudden surge of adrenaline, the sudden feeling that will overcome no matter what, somehow if it's off in the distance and you've been preparing, sometimes when you finally get to the finish line, you're tired and you've been had it so long, you don't feel the inspiration of a person who suddenly attacked and he jumps to defend himself. On the other hand, if it's a sudden thing, very often a person just gives up, he doesn't have any chance to prepare to fight. On the other hand, he very often is invigorated. Over here, hey Lilu, you in Bavel should wail, Ki Korov Yom Hashem, the day of Hashem is close. And therefore, it's going to be like a sudden fear. And yet, they're not going to have that surge of power, the adrenaline. They're not going to have the sudden excitement to fight back. Because Kishod Mishaka Yovo, it's going to be like an attack from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That whatever they do, there's no strength to fight against the army of Hashem, which is going to be Paras. Al Kain Kol Yadayim Tirpena. Therefore, all hands grow weak. V'chol levav enosh yimos. And all of the human hearts yimos melt. And again, understanding that background, that they saw the writing on the wall and it was clear that in a miraculous way, Hashem was going to destroy their whole country. So everyone gave up. But without the background, you wonder why bubble out of all the nations, all of a sudden they're disheartened and they're demoralized and they're weak and they're afraid. But v'nivholu, they'll be terrorized, they'll be all confused. Tzirim v'chavolim yochezun, they'll have tzirim. Tzirim is pains, is aches. Chazal compare it to the tzirim like as if the baby in his mother's womb needs to get out, and in a sense as if there'd be a door that would all of a sudden open and the baby would squeeze out through the door and the door somehow swings on its hinges. It's compared to that tzirim is like the tzir, the peg that holds the door, the hinge. But as it's stretching and the baby's struggling to get out, the pains and the aches, the tzirim v'chavolim yochezun, in Bavel they're going to have those aches and pains. Kayoledo yichilun, like a woman who's going through the labor pains, the contractions, like the Yoleda, the woman giving birth, that's they're going to go through that suffering. Ishal Reyehu Yismohu. One man to the other in Bavel will turn. And sometimes a person is fearful and he looks to his neighbor to get a little bit of encouragement. And over here, Ishal Reyehu Yismohu. One man turns to the other, and they're just yismo, they're in wonderment, they're astonished. Pnei lehavim pneihem, their faces like red, like a fire, either from embarrassment or from fear, their faces all flushed. They don't know exactly how to deal with this, with the enemy. Another explanation is pnei lehavim pneihem, the enemy, the people of Paras and Madai, coming from this faraway land, didn't look like the people in Bavel. They had a face that was like red-skinned. They had their face was flaming like a fire. This was like an enemy that they weren't acquainted with. They had fought them once and defeated them, but now they came back with a renewed vigor, with their faces flaming. And the people in Bavel panic. Hine Yom Hashem Bo. Behold, the day of Hashem has come. Achzari, it's a day of cruelty. Ve'evra, in a deep rage. Vacharonof, in burning anger. Somebody who's cruel is very often a premeditated act. He's just a cruel person. You know, the stories of Mengele and stuff like, you know, the sadists, the Nazis, Yamach Shemom, and, you know, or the others, but, you know, the person who'll sit there and with a level head think of all the sadistic punishments and torments they could mete out to the enemy. There's the achzori, the cruelty. And then sometimes there's the person who ve'evra, the person might not be cruel, but he has such a rage, he just goes crazy, and he lashes out, and he inflicts pain and suffering without even thinking about what he's doing. He's just in a senseless rage. And here, Bavel is going to be confronted with an enemy who has both. He's achzari, they're cruel, ve'evra, and they have this rage, and ever is like a deep anger. It's like been seething within them, just waiting for their chance to vent it. They have this evra, bacharon off, and there's that burning rage. Losum ha'aretz l'shama. They want to make the land desolate. V'chato eho yashmid mimeno. And the sinners will be annihilated. All of the wicked people of Bavel will be destroyed from the land. I just wanted to point it out. There's a Gemara in Brachas. V'chato eho. It's sinners, yashmid mimeno. There's a Gemara in Brachas that everyone is, it's a very well-known piece of Gemara. And this pasuk is an example of the correct meaning of the Gemara. The Gemara says in Brachas on Daf Yud, a well-known story. Hanu bir Yoni, there are a bunch of ruffians, a bunch of wild people. Da'avu b'shiva vusei de Rabbi Meir. They were in the neighborhood of Rabbi Meir. V'havu kometzaru leituva. They caused them a lot of pain. These people caused Rabbi Meir a lot of anguish. Have a kaboy Rabbi Meir rachmei lavayu. Rabbi Meir davened about them ki heichid leimus. They should die. It'd be a favor for them. They'd be better off dying. As the days are going by and the weeks, and they're just tormenting Rabbi Meir, they're just adding to their own guilt. Rabbi Meir davened that they should die, and that's it. Don't accumulate more averus. Amrale Beruria Devisu. Beruria, his wife, said to him, "My daitach, what do you think? Why are you davening like this? Mishum dechsiv yitamu chatoim, because there's yitamu chatoim, the sinners should be removed from the, should end, should be terminated from the land. Miksiv chotim, it doesn't say chotim. Chotim means a sinner. Chatoim ksiv, it says chatoim, meaning sins. V'od shvil sefer dekro, especially look at the end of the pasuk, urishoim onenam, there won't be any more wicked. That means if there won't be any more sins, there won't be any wicked people. That was Rabbi Meir's wife. Beruria told him the meaning of the pasuk. You should daven about these wild people, that they should do tshuva. And then if there won't be any more sins, there won't be any more sinners, and everything will be fine. Rabbi Meir davened for them, and they did tshuva. I just wanted to point out, when you look through the Gemara, it's a well-known story, and it almost seems as if Rabbi Meir made a foolish mistake. As his wife points out, you know, it doesn't say chotim, it doesn't say sinners, it says chatoim, sins. Right, chatoim is sins. Like Rabbi Meir learned to translate the pasuk wrong. So the truth is Rashi himself, Rashi says on the blot, chatoim ksiv. But a lot of people, if they're not into dictuk, sort of gloss over that Rashi. Rashi says, Karibe, read the pasuk as if it would say, Chatoim. And they put the nekudos, Chatoim, with a chat of pasach under the ches. And there's no dogesh in the tes. Chatoim can mean the word sins. But you should know the word Chatoim can also mean sinners. You have in Parshas Korach, Eis machtos ha-chatoim ho'ele. The incense pans that were held by these sinners, those that were opposing Moshe Rabbeinu on the side of Korach, chatoim can mean sinners. This is what we see in this pasuk here. It's a side point, but it's worthy of noticing. V'chato eho doesn't mean the sins. The enemy is coming, v'chato eho, and her sinners, yashmid mimeno. There's a dogesh, if you look, there's a dot in the tes. And the ches has the straight line, the pasach underneath. When it's written like that, it means sinners. And when the pasuk says, Yitamu chatoim min ha'aretz, the way it's written, it means sinners. Rabbi Meir had the correct meaning of the pasuk. However, there's something known as drushes. If the pasuk is written in a certain way, we can expound on it. The rabbis have that ability. And even though chatoim means sinners, but if the Torah wanted to make it, the Novi, the Pasuk in Tehillim, if it wanted to make it clear that the sinners have to die, it could have said chotim. By writing it the word chatoim, the point is the sinners should die, but if you remove the sins, there are no sinners. In other words, you've gotten rid of the sinners if they'll do tshuva. So Bruria made a drosha. That's what Rashi mentions there on Brachas. V'chato eho yash mimeno. But the sinners will be wiped out, will be destroyed from Bavel. Ki chokhvei hashamayim uchesileihem. The stars of the heavens. Uchesileihem in the constellations. Lo yohelu orom. Will not radiate their light. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, somehow nature, we'll see later on a little more on this, but nature itself was turned against Bavel. Choshach HaShemesh B'Tzeiso, the sun when it came out was darkened. It will be darkened when it rises. V'yareach lo yagiyah oro, and the moon, which doesn't have its own light, it radiates, it's illuminated from the sun. V'yareach will not shine lo yagiyah oro. In the figurative sense, it means that it'll seem as if the whole world is collapsing and this is coming to an end and everything's turning dark and there won't be a sun anymore and Bavel will be wiped out. It'll be evident that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, wants the destruction of Bavel. Ufakadati al tevel ra'a, and I will visit evil on the earth. Tevel is the civilized, the settled part of the earth. Bavel was again was one of the greatest empires, was the civilization of the time, and now on the Tevel, on the land, there'll be evil brought. Va'al Rishoyim Avonim, and the wicked will be paid back, will be punished for their sin. Ve'ishbati Gaon Zedim, and the pride of the Zedim, those that sin on purpose and they don't care and they do their evil.